Tony Hoare stepped to a podium in Nashville, Tennessee, in January of 1981 to accept the Touring Award. He was 46 years old. The Touring Award is the highest honor in computer science, the field's closest equivalent to the Nobel. Hoare had been given it for his work on programming languages and on the discipline of program verification, the careful mathematical effort to prove that a piece of software does what it is supposed to do. He was English, lean, soft-spoken, the kind of academic who looked more comfortable in a small seminar than in front of a ballroom full of his peers. And the room that night in Nashville was full of his peers. In the middle of his talk, in a tone that one of his contemporaries later described as wry and a little tired, he said the sentence that, more than any of his many other contributions, has followed him through the decades since. He said, "I call it my billion-dollar mistake. It was the invention of a null reference in 1965. He had added it. He explained, as a small convenience while designing a language called Algol W. He had thought, at the time, that the null reference would be a useful way to signal the absence of a value. 16 years later, in front of his peers, he stood up and apologized for it. By the year 2024, the cost of that single design decision multiplied across every language that copied it and every program ever built in those languages was probably closer to $1 trillion. The most common crash in modern software across every language that has null references is what is called a null pointer to reference. The programmer asks the program to read a value, and the value is not there, and the program collapses. There are estimates, conservative ones, that have placed the share of software failures and security vulnerabilities attributable to memory bugs of this family at around 70%. 70%. The dominant failure mode of an entire generation of code. This is Rust, gently. A patient introduction to how computers actually work and to one particular language for talking to them. I am your host. This is episode 22. The 50-year war on bugs. Today I want to walk you through one of the longer and more humbling stories in the history of computing. The slow, expensive, decades-long effort to make programs reliable. It is a story full of clever people trying clever things, of partial victories, of techniques that almost worked, of techniques that worked only at enormous cost. And at the end of it, sitting close to the present, is the language this show is named after, which has done something in the last decade that the field had been trying and failing to do for 50 years. Let me back up to the beginning of the story. In October of 1968, 61 of the best programmers in the world gathered in a small town in Bavaria called Garmisch-Partenkirchen at the foot of the Alps for a conference sponsored by NATO. The list of attendees reads like a roll call of the field's founders. Edsger Dijkstra was there. Peter Naur was there. Alan Perlis, the first Turing Award winner, was there. They met for a week in the autumn light, and they tried to articulate what was going wrong with their craft. Hardware was getting faster and cheaper at a rate that was, even then, breathtaking. Software, on the other hand, was getting buggier and more expensive at roughly the same pace. Projects ran years late. Programs in production failed in new and creative ways. The asymmetry between what the chips could do and what the programs could reliably do was widening every year. The phrase they coined at that meeting, the phrase that the proceedings, edited by Peter Naur and Brian Randall, would use repeatedly was the software crisis. The implication was uncomfortable. The discipline that they had been practicing, the writing of programs, was not really engineering yet. It was something more like craft or alchemy in the unflattering sense. They began to argue in those Bavarian sessions that something more rigorous needed to exist. They called this something software engineering. The name stuck. 2 years later, in a note that became one of the most quoted sentences in the field, Edsger Dijkstra wrote, "Program testing can be used to show the presence of bugs, but never to show their absence." The implication, which has been sitting in front of the field ever since, is that you cannot test your way to correctness. You can find bugs by testing. You can never, by testing alone, prove there are no more bugs. If you want reliability, you must design your way to it, not test your way to it. So what did the field actually try over the half century that followed? There were broadly four families of approaches. Each of them is worth a moment. The first family was static analysis, tools that read your source code without running the program and flag suspicious patterns. The earliest widely used one was called Lint, written by an engineer named Steven Johnson at Bell Labs in 1979. Lint would point at code that, although technically legal, looked like it was probably wrong. Modern descendants of Lint are called Coverity, founded out of Stanford Research in 2002, and Clangtidy, and GitHub's CodeQL, and SimGrep, and a dozen others. They work partially. They catch real bugs. They also produce a great deal of noise, and they cannot reason about anything they cannot see locally. They're a useful net, but they're a net with large holes. The second family was fuzzing. The technique was invented in 1988 by a professor named Barton Miller at the University of Wisconsin, who wrote a paper called An Empirical Study of the Reliability of Unix Utilities. What Miller did was build a tiny program that pumped random bytes into every Unix utility he could find and watch which ones crashed. The result was startling. Somewhere between a quarter and a third of all the utilities he tested fell over when fed garbage input. He had not been trying to write malicious code. He had just been pressing keys at random. The technique grew up. Modern versions, called American Fuzzy Lop, Libfuzzer, and Google's OSS Fuzz, run continuously in the cloud and have found tens of thousands of bugs in major open source projects. Fuzzing works. It finds bugs that nobody on the engineering team would ever think to look for. The trouble is that fuzzing finds bugs after you have written them, not before. The third family was sanitizers. Compiler-inserted checks that run while the program is running, watching for bad things and reporting them. Address Sanitizer, written at Google around 2011 by a Russian engineer named Konstantin Serebryany, instruments every memory access in your program and flags any that touch memory the program does not own. Thread Sanitizer watches for two threads stepping on each other. Undefined Behavior Sanitizer watches for the murky corners of the C standard where the language officially does not promise what should happen. The sanitizers slow programs down by a factor of two or three at runtime, which is too much for production, but acceptable during testing. They catch bugs you would never have caught by reading. They are extremely useful, and they are still a net cast after the fact. The fourth family was formal verification, mathematical proof by machine that a program meets a specification. This is the moonshot. It is hard, slow, and expensive. The Cell4 microkernel, an Australian project led by an engineer named Gerwin Klein and completed in 2009, is roughly 10,000 lines of C, machine verified to be free of certain classes of bug. The verification took many years of careful work by a small team of researchers, and the resulting proof is, by some measures, a larger artifact than the program itself. CompCert, a formally verified C compiler written by Xavier Leroy at INRIA in France in 2008, is another. These are extraordinary achievements. They show what is, in principle, possible. They have not, to date, become practical for ordinary programs. They are too expensive for what they offer. There is a fifth approach worth naming, which is not really a separate family, but a strengthening of the language itself. A type system is a set of rules built into a programming language that classifies values into categories. A number is a number. A string of text is a string of text. A list of numbers is a list of numbers. The compiler checks, before the program runs, that you have not accidentally added a number to a string or called a function that expects a list with something that is not a list. The stronger the type system, the more mistakes get caught at compile time, before the program ever has the chance to run and fail. C has a relatively weak type system that lets you cast almost anything to almost anything. Java has a stronger one. Haskell has a stronger one still. Rust has, in some specific dimensions, the most advanced type system in any mainstream language, because Rust tracks not just what kind of value a thing is, but who currently owns it and who is allowed to borrow it and for how long. For 50 years, the field cast nets and sanded edges and slowly chipped away at the problem. Each technique helped. None of them solved it. The dominant failure mode, the family of memory bugs, never went away. In 2019, Microsoft Security Response Center gave a public talk in which they reported that of all the security vulnerabilities assigned a number in their tracking system between 2006 and 2018, roughly 70% were memory safety bugs. The same year, the Chrome browser team reported the same number for high-severity Chrome bugs. The year after, the Android security team reported the same number. The number kept appearing in every major C and C++ code base, in every measurement the industry produced. Now, the principle that several smart people had quietly been holding, going back at least to the 1970s, was that the deeper cause was not careless engineering. The deeper cause was the language itself. C, and its more elaborate cousin C++, made an entire category of mistakes easy and provided no help in avoiding them. A programmer could write a pointer to a piece of memory, then free that memory, then read from the pointer anyway, and the language would not stop them. A programmer could write past the end of an array into whatever happened to be next to in memory, and the language would not stop them. These were not exotic errors. They were the daily errors of every programmer working at the systems level. The language gave them no help. The bugs followed. And then, in 2006, an engineer at Mozilla named Graydon Hoare, in his apartment in Vancouver, started building a programming language whose entire purpose was to refuse to compile code that had these bugs. Not catch them at testing. Not catch them at runtime. Refuse to compile them in the first place. The language was called Rust, after a family of fungi that are nearly impossible to kill. The technique that made it work, the central innovation, is called the borrow checker, and it is a kind of static analyzer running inside the compiler itself. Mozilla funded the project in 2009. Version 1.0 shipped on the 15th of May, 2015. The promise of that 1.0 release sounded, at the time, almost outrageous. The Rust team claimed that the entire family of memory bugs, the 70%, would be caught at compile time. The language would be as fast as C. There would be no garbage collector. Almost no one believed it. The decade since has been one of slow and then sudden vindication. Microsoft Azure has substantial production Rust. Amazon Web Services has substantial production Rust. Android, the operating system on every other phone in the world, has substantial production Rust, with Google reporting publicly in 2022 that the year's new Android features written in Rust contributed essentially zero memory safety vulnerabilities against a long historical baseline of dozens per release. Cloudflare, Dropbox, Discord, Figma, NPM, every major content delivery network, every major collaboration tool, runs production Rust in its hottest paths. The Linux kernel, in 2022, accepted Rust into its source tree for the first time in its 30-year history, after Linus Torvalds himself, who is not given to enthusiasm, said publicly that he had run out of reasons to keep refusing. In 2024, the White House Office of the National Cyber Director issued a public report explicitly recommending that critical infrastructure be moved to memory-safe languages, naming Rust by name. The 50-year war is not over. There are bugs that the borrow checker does not catch. There are categories of failure, like logic errors and incorrect business rules, that no language can protect you from. But the 70%, the dominant family, the bugs that have plagued the field since the meeting in Bavaria, are in Rust simply not present. The bugs cannot be written because the language refuses to accept them. Three things to carry from today. First, the field has been fighting the same family of bugs for more than 50 years, and the dominant family is memory safety bugs in low-level languages, which have made up roughly 70% of serious vulnerabilities in every major code base that has measured. Second, the techniques the field has tried, static analysis and fuzzing and sanitizers and formal verification, all help, none solve. And the deeper cause has always been the language itself rather than the engineers. Third, Rust is the first mainstream systems language to eliminate that entire family of bugs by construction, by refusing at compile time to accept code that contains them. And the past decade of adoption and production by serious companies is the slow vindication of a promise that, when it was made in 2015, almost no one believed. Next time on Rust, gently, we begin our fourth season. We will move from the broad culture of software engineering into the smaller, more specific machinery of Rust itself. We will sit down together with a single line of code and spend an entire episode on it because it is worth understanding deeply. Until then, take good care of yourself. I will see you in the next one.